Welcome back to the podcast, episode 87 with Mr. Bob Harrington. He is from Specialty Produce all the way over from San Diego, a mentor of mine and a friend of mine who gets around the world traveling and doing all these wonderful fruit and veg related things, which I'll tell you about in the podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you by Tim Adams Coffee. They are a coffee wholesaler, but they're way more than that. It's delicious coffee. They supply really great places to people who love coffee, and they do a fantastic job. And if you want to taste it, the Northerly Street Farmers Market every Sunday, head down there and look for John and the Tim Adams stand and get a bit of a taste of the coffee there. He's a legend, and they really do know what they're doing. They've got great service, great quality, and you'll love it. Tim Adams Specialty Coffee. Check them out on Instagram. Also, we have got Chef Notepad. Chef Notepad does all your costings for your menus. You need to be doing that. Check out Chef Notepad. Okay, let's get into this with Bob Harrington. Welcome to the podcast, episode 87 with Bob Harrington from Specialty Produce. Has come down to visit us here. Not in cold California, you're in warm Brisbane. Bob, what are you doing out here in Australia?
Well, I'm trying to get rid of my long sleeve shirts for some short sleeve shirts. That's my first order of business.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
So you're obviously here to document stuff for your app, but let's, you know, your app's amazing, and it's a well-used tool throughout the world. But I want to go back a little bit and talk about your story and how you even, you know, got to the point where you were traveling the world and building data on amazing fruit and vegetables. Which is an awesome part of the story, which we'll get into soon. But Bob, take me back in time a little bit, and how you and your brothers and that started Specialty Produce in San Diego.
Well, it all started in 1976 when I got fired. Worked in the supermarket, and didn't really want to go back to the same environment. So I was a real estate investor, and I sold some property. I was only 22. And I opened a store, and it only took me about 6 months to lose all my money. And then I was in poverty. And so when you, are that young and you have your first big failure, you kind of like, you learn from your mistakes really quickly. And, over the preceding years, or the subsequent years, I was able to, slowly build my retail business, produce business. And my two brothers, one by one, came down from Los Angeles and joined me in the business. And so we had a retail market for around 12 years. And then after about 12 years, we were known in the community with restaurants who would come in and buy. So we closed the store and started doing strictly wholesale.
Beautiful. Yeah. So you're doing strictly wholesale out of the restaurants. And, you know, you were known a long time ago, well before everyone else. You know, you're a computer guy. I'm going to call you a computer guy because you were the first to innovate, really, in my opinion, and where I was seeing it from when I was looking at you from Australia through Instagram and stuff. And we met, and then I traveled over there, and you were so far ahead of the game with technology. Just briefly touch on, you know, some of that stuff, which for me, you know, really pricked my ears up.
Yeah. So one of the things that my youngest brother came down when he was 18, he graduated from high school and he came down, and he was the one that was really into the new Apple computer and that kind of thing. And he started talking to me about databasing the store and how we could learn from that. So I borrowed some money and we connected our registers with a Data General computer, a mini computer. They didn't have PCs at that time. And I began to create a database of all my sales and which items were the most profitable and which items were they're just kind of taking up space. And that experience taught me how to do software projects. And so from there, I took the data that I'd learned, and what I discovered was there were only just a handful of items in our store that were 85% of the gross dollars and the margin. And so those were the items that the restaurants wanted, and that's why we made the decision just to do restaurants, because we didn't need to have a store, we just needed to have a truck.
Beautiful.
And so that's how it worked.
Yeah, I love that. So yeah, you were nailing it. And so we met 2016, like I think I said before, through Instagram. I think we just reached out and started talking to each other. And you were kind enough to say, hey, come over. So at the time, my wife was working for Virgin. And so I jumped on an airplane with my son, Jareth, much to Scarlett's disgust that I took him instead of her. And we went over and you made us feel very welcome, and we learned lots of things, and we did videos together, and we compared notes, and we've been pretty much sort of doing that since then. And I've always looked up to you and your team, and it's been a great experience. From that, so once you're in there, you're selling produce, you've got the systems and processes, you know, developing every day with great innovation, and you're nailing technology. Now, you've then started to realize, in how, where I see it, correct me if I'm wrong, Bob, that there was a bit of a gap in the information base around the world about what people are using and what you can use it for. So in the interest of the same as what our goal is to get more people enjoying and knowing about fruit and vegetables, you started a quest, the 100-year quest you refer to it as to me, of recording the details of all fruit and vegetables, a lot of fruit and vegetables throughout the world. Now that's a daunting and admirable and commendable thing that you've done, and I'm so impressed with it. I'd love to know why you decided to do that, and some of the adventures, which I'll ask you in a second question. But why did you decide to do that?
So quickly, by the early 90s, we had a pretty solid business in San Diego with restaurants, and I was bored, and I wanted a challenge. So I decided to see what I could do with chain stores, like the big Safeways and the Albertsons and the big, you know, you have Kohl's here and you have Woolworths, I think is something like that, and then you have different ones. So we had our versions of that. And so I came up with a plan to do offer free demos to the store. So I would go, let's say, get on a plane, go to Phoenix from San Diego, and I'd make an appointment with Safeway. This is a true story. And I would before I went to prep it, I had my high school daughter do demos in stores, and I would take pictures of her, and I made a photo album, and I flew over to another city, made an appointment with a couple of stores, and said, I'll give you free demos. I do this in San Diego if you buy these products from me. And every one of them said, yeah, that's great, we'll do it. So overnight I had about 23 chain stores. And I had a demo organization. This is in the early 90s before the internet, but I couldn't make money because the demos were too expensive and the stores were not keeping their part of the deal. They would buy some product from me, but then they would go to the local vendors and get a little cheaper, and they would kind of mix. So it wasn't working out. And so then when the internet came, I realized when I first saw a website, which was on a flight, on an airplane flight, on a like a magazine thing you see, and you know, you're on a flight and they entertain you with showing you something. I couldn't get my mind around a website, but it said you could put information here and it goes all over the world. That I understood. I could get that. And so I got back to San Diego. I asked my brother about that. He showed me a website, and we decided then to fire all the demo girls. And then we would start accumulate. We developed software to accumulate everything we can learn about fruits and vegetables into a database in a really, really super organized way. So we can begin publishing that on the internet. And that's how it started, around 1996.
Beautiful. I love that. And I like that, you know, I've been doing nothing on that caliber, but just I love it that it stemmed from such an idea of just educating people with the girls that you mentioned in the stores, because, you know, that is such a great thing, because like I said, we want more people to enjoy nutritious fruit and vegetables and understand and appreciate all the work that farmers put into it. So you're out here, you've just done a big trip, including New York, London,
Germany,
Athens,
Dubai,
Singapore,
Brisbane,
Japan, right?
Yeah, going to
but
Japan, yeah.
Obviously, Brisbane's your favorite.
Sure.
We've just had an adventure here, and you've come and seen our new facility. You've been up to Coolum, see the guys up there, and down to Byron, see the guys up there. What are you seeing here in Australia that you're loving, whether it be, what are you seeing in
Australia? Well, this is a perfect example, a perfect business case of why this project that I'm 71 years old now. I don't really work at specialty on a day-to-day basis. I still have a desk, at least I think I do. I haven't been there in a while. And if I go back and it's missing, I'll know. But actually, you took me up to Carnes. Cairns. Yeah. So we went and visited Fruit
Forest Farm.
Fruit Forest Farm.
Peter.
And this is what is so interesting about what I'm doing every day and what I like about it is that nobody in the world knows Peter at the Fruit Forest. But I was on his little tripod, or what? There's a little that little motor thing he has.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's like a little farm and
car. And I'm driving through the jungle, and I'm seeing cassowary birds, and he's cutting down tropical fruits from Borneo, and I'm tasting them. And there's so much that goes on in food, especially with fruits and vegetables around the world. That's extremely regional. And whether you go to, I recently did a trip to Northeast India I want to put a shout out for the Hornbill Festival in Nagaland, which was amazing. It's once a year. If anybody can go, I would recommend it. But to get into jungle food and how the Nagas put it together. So another example of regional food and regional way that people get their fruits and vegetables. And I wanted to really like see how I can tie it together in this project. And so I have a staff now that actually does the writing and the photography. I do a little bit of photography, but I do the scouting, and then I'll bring the staff in to do more of the research and writing. So the experience up in Cairns, up in
Fruit Forest Farm.
Fruit Forest Farm was amazing because I've never been to a place where I've seen so many incredible fruits. In fact, the IBU is the best fruit I've ever eaten in my entire life, and I have eaten a crap load of fruit. And so that was by far. So it's a tropical fruit, but it actually has the consistency of a melon, which is really great in a culinary world, right?
Yeah.
So a tropical fruit like a mangosteen has a certain texture and whatever, but this fruit hanging from a tree had the same consistency of a melon. It was amazing. And Peter opened it up and showed it to me, and I go, oh my God, how come you don't have 100,000 trees of these? And his wife is amazing. She's a genius. Warren, her son-in-law, and Skye, his daughter, they just do an amazing job. Family farm. It's probably the best family farm I've ever been to.
Yeah.
To be really honest with you.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the genius behind the way they frame it.
Yeah.
And how they what they do a little volume on compared to what they do kind of in an experimental way.
Yeah.
In a way that they create traffic and interest in what they're doing by having a lot of exotic types of trees. I've never seen any place like that, although there are other, we went to another place in Brisbane, close to Brisbane, which was very similar, almost the same.
Yeah, yeah, Pekoni, yeah.
You could say pretty much the same. And you would have to kind of come to Australia to have that experience. You can't, like, you're not going to find it in California.
You're not going to find it in Europe anywhere. I took you to the best farm in the world. You know, these two guys in particular are amazing. And I say that, you know, without offending other farms, but from a tropical fruit perspective, there are some really good farms up there,
yes,
don't get me wrong.
100%.
But Peter's got that, Peter and Alison, you know, they've been doing this a really long time. Their beautiful daughter Skye, Warren, their son-in-law, as you mentioned, they've built this culture and framework, as you describe it, Bob, where everyone that goes there feels amazing and special. He really looks after the whole community there with his morning teas of delicious local coffee and tea. And you know, he gives everyone an opportunity to talk. And so as far as ESG, environmental, social governance concerned, Peter actually knocks over all this thing and does it so naturally. It's such a healthy place to be. It's a cross between the Garden of Eden and Jurassic Park. What did you think of the uses that they did with the breadfruit, Bob?
You know, I want to step back one second and just want to say how well framed that whole farm is. Mm-hmm. So the framework that they have and the way they approach it, I mean, I could put it all on the side, each part of it in a silo, but we don't have enough time here.
Yeah.
But part of that framework is to really talk about the benefits and the flavors of the breadfruit. So every time we went there, they made a different recipe with breadfruit, and they did it in a really natural way. It was like they approach it like you just walked into their living room. Oh, by the way, we're just doing this right now. Why don't you try some? Mm. But it's pretty clear that it's a performance that they're really good at.
A natural at. Yeah.
And so they've taken the best of what they do and grow with, and they do a performance that's I've never seen before. I've never been to a place where you're welcome, and the owners are performing in such a way that you're just, every second you're there, you're gaining the benefit of knowledge and the experience. Yeah. And it's a good thing that we have smartphones, right? That we can take pictures of everything that we did, because it's, you want that experience to last forever.
You know, you say performance, and I know very well that they would always think, we're not performing. This is actually just what we do every day. You know, we cook breadfruit chips or plantain chips, and we make the beautiful breadfruit pancakes two ways. One of them that they do it, guys, is they chop it up, they take the core out of the breadfruit, they dehydrate it in a dehydrator, cool it down, and blend it. And then we have this beautiful gluten-free flour. I'm going to do a video on this for everybody. And then they can add sugar or, you know, let's say golden syrup or something like that. And they can make a delicious pancake. You can make a bread out of that. You can make all sorts of things, hence the name breadfruit. Then there's the cannonball breadfruit, which you let go ripe. And then you can either cook that whole in the fire, smoke it. You know, you get this delicious sweet flavors come out. And, you know, every time I go there, like Bob said, it feels like a performance, but it's absolutely amazing. And when you refer to melon, when you're talking to the Abiu, you're talking about a European melon, which is absolutely to die for. And it's just a slightly softer.
A Charente melon, like a French.
Yeah, yeah.
A vine ripe in French. Yeah. But I want to make sure that I'm not misunderstood. When I say performance, that's a compliment. That's like doing what you normally do at a much higher level.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like, I can go sing, but I'm not Taylor Swift, right? Taylor Swift's a performer. She just has a, and no matter where she is, she's a performer. Uh-huh. So I didn't mean that, and I meant that in a very complimentary way.
Yeah, I realize that. I was just clarifying that.
They're just very good at what they do, and it rises to the level of performing.
Okay, so you're nice enough to send a lot of your team around the world as well. Tell me about some of the adventures you've had. Let's talk about India.
India is really a unique place, and it's a really large country. It's very diverse. The southern part of India is way different than the northern part. I've done 7 or 8 trips there, and this last one was during the Hornbill. And this is the first time I brought my marketing staff, and one photographer, one executive, and then my writer. And we participated 3 or 4 days at the Hornbill 10-day event, and then we did some foraging in Dimapur. They have this, they call it the supermarket, but it's not like a supermarket in Brisbane or the USA. It's a street, and it's probably 1/4 mile, and everybody comes out of from where they live around Dimapur, and they bring their palm fruits or whatever they have, and there's a diverse variety of fruits and vegetables that come out of the jungle, or they buy at the local market, and it's an experience that you can't have unless you actually go to Dimapur. It's one of the best local markets I've been to.
Dimapur,
Dimapur.
And what time of year is that Hornbill festival?
It was in December. Okay. And the weather is really good. You fly into Dimapur, then you have to take a car to Kohima, which is the capital of Northeast India, Nagaland. And it's a huge, the U.S. ambassador was there. It's a huge celebration, and all the 17 tribes get together, and they put on an amazing show with all their history and their food, and it was really quite an amazing experience.
Tell me about the interesting products you found there.
One of the other fruits that I found in India that I really like are the wood apples, and I'm not sure you get them in Australia. And of course, they are, and the manjal fruit, they call it sea coconut.
Yep.
And that's a really interesting fruit that's really popular when it comes in the season. There's a lot of street vendors that will have that on the side streets.
So you're heading down to, what about North America? What's exciting about there?
You know, I think that what's exciting about North America is California, where I am from, we do a lot of interesting citrus and apples. And in Washington State, we do a lot of cherries, which are amazing in the local markets there. And in New York, upstate, we do a lot of potatoes. And in Idaho, we do a lot of potatoes. And then we have Florida, where we do a lot of tropicals.
Yep.
But the Florida tropicals are good, but, you know, I think there's something about, you know, I'm not sure we are at the level that I saw, like, in Cairns when we were there.
Yeah.
I mean, where the soil is a certain way, and the seeds come from Borneo, and
yeah, the farming
it's kind of the same.
So.
Yeah, it's a different type of year-round weather. So it's just at a different level, although we do have really good fruit from Florida as well.
Yeah, beautiful. So. Potatoes. Let's talk potatoes for a second. You were heading down to South America somewhere?
Yeah, I'm going to go to Peru, I think, in May.
Yeah.
That's when they celebrate potatoes, because there's many different kinds of potatoes there, and I want to do... I was there twice before the pandemic, and I want to go back and begin working. Because usually it takes me several trips to really understand the... you know, the regional market.
Yep.
And then once I have an understanding of it, then I'll send the whole staff down.
Yep.
And I'll let them, and I'll map it out for them, where they're going to go, who they're going to talk to, and to get the research.
And you were saying, like, there's so many potatoes, it's ridiculous. It's, you know, we've got great growers in Tasmania and in Victoria and in Queensland, actually, but mostly from the south with the colder weather. But you said that you don't see many kifflers around the world.
Oh, no, I don't see, only in Australia.
Really?
As far as I know, but it could be some in UK. There is a place in UK that's down in Tincherton, and it's the potato. I keep thinking like potato sales or potato shack or potato. I can't remember exactly what it's called, but they do nothing but about 35 kinds of potatoes, and they do send up to the restaurants in London, and they are in all the farmers markets and. We visited there a couple times and got to go through the fields and talk to the people that run the farm, and a lot of interesting there. But in Europe, I think the most popular one is the ones from Cyprus,
right.
Because they're the ones that grow on the volcanic island, and then when they're in season, all the markets have the Cyprus potato, and that's the dominant one. But then during the years, they also have their own local varieties that are developed in UK.
Yep. So when you're traveling the world through Europe, Japan, India, which actually, before I ask you about restaurants you've been to, experiences that blew your mind in Europe, whether it be mushrooms or foraging or what happened in Europe that's from a product perspective that you absolutely have a great
memory. So from a product perspective, everything there is, and like when you get into France, Belgium, Netherlands, I have friends who have produce companies, Rungi in Rotterdam, and they are kind enough to give me access to their inventory when I go there to see what they bring things in from Spain, from different places. So the fruits and vegetables there seem to me to be generational, in that it's one generation after another that works on the same land and produce increasingly better product. And it's almost an art form. It's at a level that, and everything is really about flavor, and they don't really, you know, in North America, what was really distinctively different between Europe and North America is the United States is really, and it started with World War II, we were really about production and logistics moving things
Industrial
around.
Industrial Revolution.
Putting it in either a frozen bag or whatever. But there, it's just the opposite. It's got to be about having it fresh and having it, and their standards are just really very high. And of course, there's a price attached to that, but then the product is pretty staggeringly good.
Look, I think we can talk about that, because flavor is one of the areas that is really important to the foundation of Suncoast Fresh. And like the pineapple that we had in North Queensland at Nunu, when he wrapped it in that duck prosciutto, served it with the honey and the Davidson plum powder. You know, like, you can just really see the craftsmanship of chefs and also their selection process. And I know that, there's a lot of commercial stuff that, you know, is good, but there's also this fine amount of excellent stuff that people are still growing, the heirloom varieties. And that's what we like to educate people on here with our garden and by going out there. And we create a list every week for, you know, there's just that, the really small boutique growers who grow with flavor, like Peter, like Bocconi, foragers who are just growing and foraging those beautiful full flavor products. And a lot of the time they're the restaurants where you go to, but you actually don't understand why a lot of the time, but you go there and go, oh my God, that was just blew my socks off. And I'm going to recommend that everywhere.
And it's really about the ingredients, and it's about the farms who understand that, and they want to grow their quality, more than they want to grow their production.
Yeah.
And I think you end up with ingredients that really transform the whole industry in a region if you have the right ingredients at the right time of the year to produce the products that people would really enjoy going out. Because when you're going to go out to eat, you want to be able to have something that you can't make in your own kitchen, right?
You do.
And that's really the critical thing, which is not always, you know, I'm not sure how true that is in most restaurants. You know, there's the convenience thing in California where McDonald's started, and that was great to get French fries and whatever. But, you know, anybody can make a hamburger and French fries at home. So there is a part of what we do in a culinary way that's really valuable if we can produce an experience at a restaurant. And you know, as suppliers, as your business is supplying, I'm supplying, we have to help the chefs produce a product that people cannot duplicate at home.
Yeah, I find that the flavor is such an important thing. I remember taking a pineapple again, actually, to my mum in her aunt's home last year, and she immediately, like we do with flavors and smells, was taken back in time to a memory that she had, like of nearly the first time of a pineapple. And I see an opportunity there with aged homes in that, you know, there's a lot of people coming into that age bracket in Australia, but a lot of them are not having the food experiences that take them back and almost, you know, bring them joy from enjoying, you know, real food. So yes. I feel very fortunate that we're starting to be more involved in that. Tell me about some of your friends of the world. You know, you travel around, you've met me, there's the guys in the Netherlands, there's the guys in Borough Market. Tell me about some of these amazing friends and some of their books that they've written.
Yeah,
because you're very fortunate to see a lot of businesses and make a lot of acquaintances. And I think that's such an important part of life and business. And I don't think we do it enough. But we're starting to do it more. We're right here on the rooftop here in Brisbane with our beautiful gardening team, just gardening quietly around us. They can't even hear me. And I just think building them sort of communities is great. But you've gone that on a global scale, and I'm going to try and follow in your footstep by visiting the guys in London, visiting the guys in Norway, and building that global community so we can compare notes.
Yeah, I like to try to keep a low profile. I don't, you know, I have a marketing department, but I'm not part of it. I do, you know, I just do behind the scenes. But it's really amazing to learn that in most markets, there is a version of yourself. Like I come here to Brisbane, I met you, and then you know, we're a version of each other in our own different regions. And then, but we're not alone. And that's true everywhere that, where there is markets. I have a friend in Peru, who owns a produce company there, and I want to go back down and reconnect with him after the pandemic. And there are people like us. In fact, I was in Peru my first trip, and I did an Instagram there because I always like to do one Instagram when I visit so I can prove that I was there. So, and then he happened to see it, and he wrote me a private message, said, "Hey, are you in Lima?" I go, "Yeah." He goes, "Can we have coffee?" So that we got to know each other much better. And he took me all around Lima and showed me and got me a lot of products that I took photographs of. And he was very, very instrumental in helping me build some information on the Peruvian vegetables. I love the jacate that we get there. It's an herb that they sell from the Andes in the local markets. And he took me to a restaurant where they fry it with the fish. And I was just like, I've never had a flavor like that before. It was really amazing. And my staff is very good too. My staff will get to know people. I met Gert-Jan in Netherlands. He's a really great guy. He has a similar company to Suncoast and to Specialty Produce in Rotterdam. Great family. And so he gives me a key to his warehouse, literally. Mm-hmm. And says, "We don't work on Sundays, but here's the key to the front door. If you want to go in and look for stuff to photograph, just go and get." They're just really good people that trust you and that kind of thing. So, and also in the UK, you know, I've gotten to know, one of my favorite places is Borough Market, where you have turnips, and Fred Foster wrote a book, and it's called Turnips, and I brought you a copy of it.
Thank you very much.
It's a brilliant book, actually, and it's available on Amazon. And he's such a genius in the way he thinks through everything. Now, there's nothing that he does that's random. And he, in a lot of ways, from the outside looking in, is very similar to you or to Peter and Allison to Gert Jan. They really think through what they're doing. And Peter's sat down and wrote a book about it, which is really interesting to for me to get. And I bought 100 copies so I can give them out to my friends in San Diego when they come by and see me. And it's just an interesting guy. But there's people like ourselves everywhere. And that's usually, I try to keep a low profile, but sometimes when I'm asking questions, I get to know people, and you know, it turns out that we have a lot in common and we become friends.
Yes, well, it's easy to do, Bob. You're a great man, and it's you make everyone feel very comfortable. And it's great to hang out with you and learn from you. What about in the States? Tell me about some of the wonderful growers we get to work there. Because when myself, Dwayne, Benny Green, Sam Johnson, we all went over on another journey, and we kept going to the Santa Monica Farmers Market, which is probably one of the tastiest I've been to. It's very classy, you might say, in that it's, you know, straight line and cleans and probably HACCP approved, as opposed to the ones that you may have found in India, which are more organic and gorgeous from, you know, a lot more forage products. Tell me about some of the growers you get to work with and the relationships you've formed over the years there.
Yeah, so Santa Monica is a legendary market. It's the market where all the movie stars go to. It's in Santa Monica. They all live there. So you go down there maybe you're buying tomatoes right next to somebody you just saw in a movie. That's very, it happens a lot. There's a long list of growers who want to sell there. So it takes a little while to you know, get to the level where you can, and most of the people that sell fruits and vegetables in Santa Monica have to be at a level where the ingredients are the key. It's not about, you know, how much you can sell. It's really, you have to show that you are producing something that's really valuable to the community, and because you're going to be able to sell to restaurants in Santa Monica, you're going to be able to sell to the locals who live there. And so the managers of the market really want to have a high-end market there. But that's serviced by family farms. You know, you got to prove that you're a family farm. You live on the farm, you're growing it, you're eating it yourself, and it's just part of your lifestyle. And then it all comes together on Wednesdays and Saturdays. And Specialty sends a truck there. We're one of the largest buyers on that market, and we deliver to the restaurants in San Diego from there.
Yeah. I love that. I've always had a great time there, and I think Scarlett and I will be out there at some point soon to visit you again, and we'll be heading to that market. Bob, I know you've got an amazing team. Tell me a little bit about your team and how, you know, you refer to them to me as, you know, your superstars. Tell me about some of your team.
Yeah, well, we have, I have a what I call the hard cap, which is the five senior people, and I'll give you their first names: Dan, Joe, Ashley, Kathy, and Angela. And they run the different departments that run the company. And then underneath them, we have I should stick there because I have about 20. I don't give out 20 names after that. But they know who they are.
Yeah,
but that's the hard cap. And then they have their staffs that work underneath them. Alex, who runs the purchasing department, is an amazing individual, personal. You'd want him as your neighbor. He's just a great guy.
Yeah.
And then underneath them, there's a whole bunch of people that I've been able to accumulate over 35 years since I've been doing it. And a lot of employees at Specialty have been there over 30 years.
Yeah.
And many over 25 years, many over 20 years, and many over 10 years. So we don't like to see our employees leave.
Bob, we've spoken to us about the books you love. What is your favorite fruit? I know you actually answered this already as well.
Actually, you know,
you said
this is going to sound crazy. My favorite fruit is, like, I love watermelon and cherries.
Yeah.
It's really super simple.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just have a lot of childhood memories of breaking open that watermelon with my brothers and sisters and having it used on a picnic or something. And it was like, you know, my mother would bring in a big watermelon. We'd cut it up and everybody would have theirs. We had seeds. We spit at each other. Yeah, I love watermelon.
What do you think about our garden up here on the roof?
Oh, I think it's amazing. I'm waiting to get, you promised me a list of everything you're growing.
Yes.
Because I want to learn too.
Yes.
And I think it's really important that the message is sent that when it comes to Suncoast, you're really interesting in impacting the quality of work that your customers are able to accomplish. And you want to run your company to be a partner to them, to give them as much help in that process. And I think the platform that you created with, which I love this platform, of the garden and the way you're working on it, has got so many possibilities. I mean, it's just the beginning of it now, but I think that over the years, it's going to be really prominent in the way that people begin to even conceptualize what they want to do with their food. And I think you can be it's a really good laboratory for people to come up here and try different flavors. And I think it's well done. And I think you should continue and build on it and come up with different ways to distribute what you've learned.
Thank you, Bob. And I've got a great team, Future Wild. I've been on the podcast as well, as most of you may well know. And we're growing lovely things up here. If you haven't been to the warehouse in Brizzy, make sure you come and visit, because it truly is an inspirational and educational delight. And we've got a lot of lovely people who have put a lot of work into this beautiful place. We do all sorts of events and things up here. It's great. Anyway, that's not plugging myself. Bob, you're an inspiration to me and many people around the world. And I thank you for investing the money and the time to rip around the world and connect people who are like-minded. And I know you're very select with that, and I appreciate being on that list. I genuinely do. Thank you so much. And I look forward to many more adventures. And I think that this 100-year thing that's going to go on of you recording, or your team in the future recording stuff well after we go, this is just the very start of it. And one day they're going to probably listen to this podcast. We want to thank you in the future for continually building this database so that people can learn and appreciate and enjoy fruit and vegetables forever and ever. So thank you, Bob. And we really appreciate you visiting, and we look forward to coming over and seeing you very shortly.
Well, thank you, Graham. And I can't tell you how great it is to come here and be welcomed by you and your staff. I wasn't really expecting it, but I'm just so overwhelmed, over the top. And traveling with you and you show me so many new things I didn't know. And I really appreciate that. And I'm going to be digesting it for a number of weeks.
And I'm so glad you didn't get killed by a cassowary when we chased one through the
forest. Oh, yeah, one chased me. Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah.
Thank you, Bob.
All righty. Take care.